Hey friends, you're listening to the Remote Work Bestie podcast. I'm your host, Anila Flores. You might have seen me on CNBC, Time, BuzzFeed, or my blog, I Like to Dabble, talking about money, side hustles, and remote careers, because I'm pretty obsessed with demystifying and busting open all of the above. So what even is this podcast? Remote Work Bestie is here to challenge the traditional 9-to-5, 40-hour work week and help you navigate a more flexible way of working and living. Join me every week as I chat with experts and other remote work besties to help you navigate the world of work and money in a non-boring, exposing, weird, and fun way. What is a remote side hustle? It's basically any side hustle that you can do from wherever you are with a laptop and Wi-Fi. So today I'm chatting with Nick Loper, founder of the website Side Hustle Nation and the Side Hustle Show podcast. We spoke on Nick's podcast at the beginning of this year about TikTok side hustles and what's legit versus not so much. That made me think that we need to do another episode together to answer some of the questions that have been coming in about remote side hustles. So Nick, thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. Tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and what you were doing before starting Side Hustle Nation and kind of diving into this whole entrepreneurship journey.
You bet. Well, thank you for having me. Always love geeking out on this stuff, the pros and cons, the ins and outs. Like it's an absolute blast. And that's one of the things that's kept me doing it for the last 10 years. In May, Side Hustle Nation turned 10, which is just nuts to me. It was, you know, a $60 mic in the corner of the living room, you know, starting with, you know, friends and colleagues, you know, is anybody going to listen to this stuff? And it was a completely life-changing experiment. Now, what I was doing for the main thing at that time was the original Side Hustle, which was a footwear comparison shopping site. Like back in the early days of the internet, if you wanted to find out, well, where can I find the best price on my next pair of shoes? This site would help you do that. And we'd have all this cool, like, you know, coupon integrations that we'd find and like, oh, you know, you get $20 off if you use this code. And that operated on an affiliate model where if you ordered that pair of shoes through Zappos, Amazon, wherever, you know, we would get a finder's fee or an affiliate commission for that. And that was the thing that let me quit my corporate job, you know, turn in the keys to the company car and be like, I'll be a full-time internet shoe salesman. And that was kind of thing. But, you know, just on a personal level, like we live outside of Seattle. This is where I grew up. We just took a quick detour to the, you know, quick by being like 15 years to the East Coast, to the South, and then spent a lot of time in California before moving back a couple years ago. Got a couple young boys. They're 5 and 7 that they keep us pretty busy, but just playing the internet game and trying to put some good stuff out into the world.
Yeah, that's, I did not know you lived outside of Seattle. I also live outside of Seattle, but across the peninsula.
Yes, we're in the kind of like east suburbs.
Oh, cool. Cool. So being in this space online, I occasionally get some pushback about side hustles in general, you know, in regards to pushing the toxic hustle culture that we already have in America. But I like your approach of hustling is about taking back control of your own effort and your own financial health and well-being, which is like, that's what it is. I agree with that. And the word hustle is just a buzzword. It's just a marketing buzzword. It's about experimenting with different ways of working and finding one that ultimately works better for you so you can live more, you know, live more now and eventually work less. Do you want to expand a little bit more on your thoughts kind of about, I guess, people's perception of hustling, especially like with a lot of articles out there that you can use the buzzword and just the entire culture online around side hustles and how it's not exactly that. It's different for everybody, of course.
It is. It's a bit of a loaded word. And you know, when I started the site, the more common connotation was like, oh, I got hustled or it was a scam artist or something. Yeah. It's like, hey, no, this is, you know, previous generations would have called it moonlighting or, you know, getting a second job. But there's an important distinction between side hustles and getting a second job. And it's that entrepreneurial upside where it's like, there's a potential for scale here. But I think, you know, in regards to like the hustle backlash or the toxic hustle culture, I think we can both agree that a world in which people need a second income to make ends meet isn't ideal, but also a world where people have the opportunity to earn a second income, that's kind of a positive thing, like to be able to build a better life. And there's, you know, there's seasons of life. And thinking back to kind of the newborn phase where you just, you know, just a zombie. Like I'm just trying to get through my days. Mm-hmm. And like, I don't need to be getting up at 5 a.m. trying to like make something happen. But at the same time, if you're stuck and if you're not happy with where you're at, it is on you to make something happen, to be proactive about that. I don't know. It's very much a loaded word. Like the idea of, you know, rise and grind and burn the candle at both ends, super unsustainable in the long run. But sometimes you got to do the sucky thing to get through to the better thing. And there's, you know, lots of Side Hustle Show guests have kind of mentioned this like sprint period. And you've probably heard the, you know, the quote that, you know, an entrepreneur is someone who will live a few years like others won't, so that they can live a lot of years like others can't. And I think there is some truth to that.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that, because the reason that I'm here right now doing this stuff where I like to dabble for Remote Work Bestie and the freelance writing business that I've kind of created is because I put 2 years, I think, in. Well, the first year was a lot. I was thinking that I needed to do as much work as I could on my blog in the mornings, at nights, on the weekends. I sacrificed a little bit too much time away from family than I probably should have, because I was following advice online that wasn't for me, you know, and then like seeing in my own family dynamic how choosing this work over them, you know, I needed to reevaluate that. And I think a lot of people, when they start side hustling or just trying to do like some entrepreneurial endeavor on the side of their job or just trying to figure out how to fit into their life, they don't think about that, where it's like, you do have other commitments and you do need to evaluate that before you jump into it, because then that will create a toxic situation probably later on. You know, those years that you have to put all this work in.
Yeah. But I mean, in your case, you're laying the foundation for something that is an asset that you have ownership in, that, you know, can pay you whether or not you show up. I think that's an important distinction between like, I went out and, you know, was driving for DoorDash or something.
Oh, right. Yeah. So like the side hustle apps like DoorDash, like Instacart or Rover, you know, those are going to be just trading your time for money, and you're not really building a foundation to kind of get paid, you know, over that time in the future from like semi-passive income streams, like from something like a blog or, you know, like YouTube, maybe courses, affiliate links, of course, yeah. ads on websites, ads on any other kind of project somebody puts out there, which definitely brings like, this is all under the realm of remote side hustles, which remote side hustles, that term in general is something that I just made up one day because of remote work. So I wanted to, people started asking me about like virtual side hustles, like sure, things sure. that they could do without having to go somewhere. And those are the people that needed more of like a flexible solution. So I always refer to it as remote side hustles, just so they know upfront that like, okay, I'm not talking about gig apps here. I mean, I know you've done a ton of different remote side hustles, basically side hustles that you can do from wherever you are, like yeah. editing, like freelancing, like your website, like podcasting. What are some of the favorites of your own that you've tried versus like maybe not so much?
Yeah, it's hard to beat the time leveraged income. We won't call it passive, but the time leveraged income of mm-hmm. building a website that answers people's questions, that solves people's problems. And it, you know, starting with the shoe business almost by accident, but kind of backing into that, oh, people are naturally curious. Where can I find, you know, the best deal on this thing? Like, okay, we can help answer that question and we can get paid essentially for building that resource. And it's the same more recently with the content-based sites. So Side Hustle Nation is an example of that. I Like to Dabble is an example of that. I built and sold a site called virtualassistant.com, like started in 2011, like even before the side hustle stuff started. And it was, you know, like a directory and review platform for outsourcing companies like Yelp for virtual assistants. And it was born out of my own, you know, curiosity and frustration and like just question like, oh, which of these companies are legit? Like I needed some help in the shoe business. Mm-hmm. And like, oh, who should I hire? How does this work? I don't really want to have some local college student coming over and like, you know, working at my dining room table. Like that seems weird. Yeah. So stuff like that. So that's definitely, you know, the business model that I'm a fan of, because it's, you know, create something once, get paid for it over and over again. Like I am, for whatever like personality quirk, or like I'm attracted to that, even though, you know, for the first months, potentially years, like you're working for probably below minimum wage, like trying to build this stuff up to yeah. build the authority, to build the traffic and just the learning curve that comes along with it. But, you know, it's something that it takes the same effort. You know, if we look at YouTube as an example, or even blogging, you know, it takes the same effort to create the thing that 10 people read or that 10,000 people read. So it's got some unique scale or opportunities for scale. And the internet's open 24/7. So meaning after I hit publish, you know, somebody could come and find that, you know, without me having to sit behind the laptop and like do customer service one-on-one. So that's something that I really like. I've been self-publishing since 2012. I've got 6 or 8 different in books and journals out there. Like I love that platform as well. Just, you know, create something once, sell it over and over again. One of the things that I've been trying to do for the last probably 8-ish years is taking proceeds from the business and investing in truly passive assets like dividend paying stocks, dividend paying investments. And like, even though, you know, the yields aren't anything to like necessarily get super excited about, it's like, how can I stack that up and like have kind of every quarter or every 6 months, like look at that, you know, what's my projected truly passive cash flow and just like keep stacking that stuff up. And then there's one more, I don't know, you probably covered this too, but the Amazon influencer program is like my latest and greatest, you know, remote side hustle, because it's just reviewing products that, you know, look at your Amazon orders or look around. Yeah, this guy started in this office and like, oh, my desk and the camera and the ring light and the, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. And you put up these videos, you know, almost no production value, just shot with your phone. And then all of a sudden you start to see some commissions from Amazon. And so they're putting these videos on their product pages. Mm-hmm. And I guess if somebody watches your video and then buys the product, they're like, hey, thanks for helping close that sale. And it's, you know, it's Amazon, so they probably have ulterior motives. Like, well, we're going to crowdsource all of this video content and, you know, we'll pay people a couple pennies for doing it. But it's been the easiest money that I've ever made online. So like within a couple of days, it was like, I had my first $9. I was like, dang, that took a lot less effort than trying to build up, you know, this whole website.
Oh, right. Like, so with that, you wouldn't need a whole website, a whole email list, all of these avenues of marketing on your own. It's just kind of through Amazon, which I didn't really know. I mean, I'm part of Amazon's affiliate program. And a couple of years ago, they did used to pay a whole lot better than they do now.
Right, right.
And I haven't been utilizing those links really as much, just because compared to other affiliates, you know, I was prioritizing differently. But I did not know you started a website. You said it was virtualassistant.com.
Virtualassistantassistant.com.
Virtualassistantassistant.
It was kind of a mouthful. And I was like, we'll be your virtual assistant. And it was like, okay.
Right. A lot of people think virtual assisting is like a newer side hustle, even though it's been around for, I mean, as long as people have had computers and have assisted other businesses online, that's a virtual assistant.
Yeah. It's been around since like the mid 90s, like since the dawn of the internet for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. So just like remote work has, you know, none of these things are really new. They just kind of evolved, especially with like the changing needs online with content creation for sure. There's a lot more virtual assistants and a lot more people are talking about it. Like, what is the absolute worst side hustle you've ever tried?
Worst side hustle. It would probably be accurate to say like I've had more failures than most people have had at bats, you know.
Yeah.
It's just, yeah, keep swinging. I'm trying to think other ones that didn't work out. So I had the shoe business that was kind of the bread and butter for a lot of years. Tried to create a handful of spin-off sites that ultimately didn't really go anywhere. I tried to get even more niche and build like a sandal site. And it was a lot of duplicate inventory. It was super seasonal. The price points were lower because it was, you know, it was sandals and not shoes and boots. So it just failed for a lot of reasons. A lot of my advertiser partners sold handbags and like luggage. So I tried to build out like the handbag and luggage comparison engine. Mm-hmm. And, you know, similarly, like, you know, lots of super nerdy issues of like churning through a bunch of data, you know, to pull out the 1% of this store's inventory that was relevant to the site, and, you know, lower commissions across the board and just all sorts of challenges there. I'm trying to think of other, like retail arbitrage wasn't fully remote because you had to go out to the store, but it was like, while you're out running errands, hey, let me swing by the clearance section of Home Depot, or, you know, my case was like a lot of stuff from Babies R Us. Like, hey, got a newborn, going here anyways. Let's stop by, use the Amazon seller app to see what the, you know, price differential spread is, and did end up making some money from that. But it would be tough to justify making dedicated trips to do it, because, you know, sometimes you'd spend 40 minutes in the store and walk out empty handed. Like, that's a little bit tricky, but it did open my eyes to, yes, this is possible. Yes. Even in the era of, you know, big data, there's still profit to be found on these local shelves. And it was a big testament to the power of Amazon. So I, you know, just randomly opened up the Amazon seller app a couple of days after sending something in, and I was like, oh, you sold $128. I was like, already? Like, that stuff must have just hit the warehouse. And so that was really interesting. And then the other ones, I love the idea of like print on demand Etsy shop.
Yeah.
It just, you know, again, because you create the designs, upload them, automate everything. Like, that's super appealing to me. I would love to do like a super nerdy, like science themed type of shop, And it's just, you know, finding the time to really crank out such a volume game. Like I got to come up with 100 or 500 designs to find the, you know, dozen that will sell. So I have yet to dedicate the time to really doing that and learning the platform.
Yeah. Print on demand. It was attractive to me as well. So I tried it out. And just like you said, it's a lot of volume of work to go up front. And I think maintaining it as well. I tried an Etsy on demand, print on demand shop.
Yeah.
It was gothic themed, gothic bachelorette, gothic like party supplies. Yeah. And I got a couple of group orders before the pandemic, but then I was doing this like right at the beginning of that year. So it kind of cut it off. And I'm like, well, people aren't having parties. And I didn't really at the time, nor the interest to kind of keep at it and try to figure out how I would pivot in that, because I was focusing on these other things that had more of my attention and deserved more of my attention.
Yeah.
Something I haven't talked about really much at all is like selling websites, like building a website and then selling it. And you have, I guess you've built two websites now that you've sold.
Unfortunately, the shoe business kind of died a slow and painful death, but the VA site, learning from that mistake, the VA site was able to sell that one in 2020. And that was kind of cool. It was like a lowish six-figure exit. So it wasn't like life-changing money, but it was this idea that, okay, I'm building something that has monthly semi-passive cash flow, didn't take a ton of time to maintain, and it had equity. It was like this asset that I created that didn't need, you know, wasn't necessarily my face, you know, on the site. And this is my challenge with Side Hustle Nation. It's kind of like my mug on the cover. It's kind of a personally branded project. It'd be tough to back away from that. But in this case, didn't need to be me running the thing. So another buyer came in and said, yeah, we can take this thing, take the reins. And, you know, they were looking for a remote side hustle. And they said, rather than build something from scratch, hey, why don't we buy an income stream that already exists? Like, sure, let's do it.
Yeah. I mean, low six figures, I think that would be pretty life-changing in some instances, especially if people are trying to, you know, if they want to invest it back into their business or invest it, you know, low six figures would definitely, I think, be life-changing in that instance.
But was it? Not to diminish it, but it's like, you're not going to retire.
Oh, right. Like you're not going to retire from selling that website. And I think it also talks to like, when we see other people talking about buying and selling websites and creating and selling websites, they do always talk about the really high numbers of like I've seen people, you know, get like 500,000 or more for the website.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, that's definitely not diminishing it if it was low six figures on your end.
Yeah.
So,
because that the way the math works is like, well, it's going to sell for 36 times monthly earnings or mm-hmm. something like that. And you're like, okay, so if I could get this to 10 grand a month, you know, not only is that a great income, but it's also this asset that's worth 350 grand or something, you know, it could be significant. And in a lot of parts of the country, like that's a house, like that's, you know, generational wealth in some cases. So it's, I don't know. That's one reason I like that asset class. Like if you're going to invest the time, if we did kind of an episode swap with, I want to say our mutual friend, Coach Chad Carson from his new book, like The Small But Mighty Real Estate Investor.
Yeah.
And, you know, he came on and he was like, look, if I had to go zero to a million in 2 years, here's what I'd do. And he laid out like, well, I would, you know, start to build these commercial property syndicates or something. Like, cool. That's your expertise. That's how I would know the first thing about that.
Yeah,
like, you know, if I had to do this, like, and, you know, had to build this asset, like, I think it's feasible, like knowing what you know, or learning the skills that you could do. So we just had Shelley Marmer on the show, like building up this network of travel sites for Mexico. And she was at 50 grand a month, like 3 years deep into it. And it was like putting in lots of work, studying the best practices, optimizing for SEO. And, you know, not only is she generating crazy monthly cash flow, but, you know, also has this, you know, pretty significant asset on her hands too.
Yeah. I also like assets where you don't have to have your personal identity or your image or anything about your life attached to them. I've realized that now through going, you know, through creating my blog, through creating this community online, and through now so many people also wanting to see more of my personal life when I'm not that comfortable with sharing a lot of it. I mean, now I'm craving like a project where I don't have to use anything about me whatsoever in it, because it's exhausting to put yourself out there so much. And it's, you know, it's also a safety issue and a security issue, I think, like in regards to how our data is used online and our consent about that, you know.
Have you had any, you know, weirdos come out of the woodwork, or any like just kind of creepy things that you weren't expecting going into it?
Oh yeah, a ton of creepy stuff. I get like emails that are like hateful because I am like open about being queer and that I have a wife and those things and being non-binary. And people will send me emails about this stuff and tell me that I shouldn't talk about it on there because it alienates other people. I was like, I don't know how that alienates you, but okay, because my identity has nothing to do with you. Or like creepy social media stuff from like people trying to hit on me and I just block them, or people threatening me. A lot of the stuff is just like immediately blocking, you know?
Yeah.
Or just like hateful comments. It's like, whatever, user 591235, like whatever. Like, I'm just going to block you. I used to try to, like, I used to fall into the trap of arguing online. Now just immediately block, you know?
No, don't engage.
Yeah.
Develop a thick skin pretty quick.
Right.
And it becomes, I mean, Tim Ferriss has this article about just like the law of large numbers. Like, you got 100,000 people paying attention to you. Imagine a town of 100,000 people. There's bound to be a couple crazies. You know, there might even be a murderer. Like, it's just, it is a little bit concerning to put your face out there in that way.
Yeah. When I thought about how a lot of our data is used on platforms like Instagram and TikTok, we actually don't own it anymore once we put it out there. And that had me thinking, it's like, well, there are people that, you know, can do hacking very well and they could find things out about me. So anyway, like, I've been thinking of just projects to do that don't include so much of me in them. You know, for other people, if they'd want to create a lifestyle brand that they can manage easily online as a remote business, side hustle for themselves, whatever it is, like, they should totally go for it. But be mindful of the data you put out there and how you share your life. Just, you know, just be mindful of it. Protect yourself. And also with social media comes like a ton of scams, including like, you know, the crypto scammers that come into your DMs or the people that they will copy and put up a clone of someone's website. If you have like over 10,000 followers, they'll start just, creating fake profiles.
Yeah, these fake accounts. Yeah, we had Nloper, you know, or Nloper with 2P, you know. And, and they're like, hey, did you create a new profile? Like, no, it's just, don't fall for it. There's some scammer. It's awful.
Oh yeah, I get those too. And it's like, it's just report and block, please report and block. What are some other like side hustle scams that you have seen lately or just have heard about, maybe people trying them and they're like, this is not good, or like, you know, that you've seen yourself online?
With any scam, there's like a glimmer of truth. Like, it works for a small percentage of the people. It's just like, that's probably an outlier scenario. So, you know, red flags to look for, you know, big upfront costs. You know, if you got to pre-buy a bunch of inventory, like, you know, would there be a way to validate this idea a little more inexpensively? You know, if it's, you know, the old rule, like, if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. But at the same time, you know, there are legit stories of people changing their lives out there. So, tread carefully with this stuff. If you can, try and, you know, collect a variety of different inputs and, you know, try and, you know, vet third-party reviews and all that stuff. You know, probably the ones to be wary of are, you know, kind of the short-term, you know, almost arbitrage plays, where like one we talked about on our TikTok side hustles episode was like you can make $500 a day doing transcription work. And how it works is you know, you get paid $1 per audio minute from this site, but then you just go use this, AI, voice, you know, to text transcription tool. And it's, you know, pure margin. Like, that's not going to work. Like, the people who are paying $1 a minute, you know, they know that these tools exist, and that's a reason why they're paying a human to do it. Like, it's just, you're not going to fool anybody for very long there. Other ones, you know, while you're evaluating different side hustle options, is just to think about, you know, what does success look like? You know, 3 to 5 years out, it's going to be different. You know, which path you choose is going to be different depending on your goals. But, you know, if this is successful, is that worth it? Like, are, you know, have I decoupled my earning power from my hourly input? Or is there a natural ceiling to that? Like, if the natural ceiling is $15, $20 an hour, is that a win? Or are you looking for something, if you're looking for something more?
Yeah. To the point of AI transcription. So I've been trying to transcribe my podcast episodes, and all of the tools I've used so far suck for AI transcription. So if anybody's thinking about doing that, please do not do them, because they create more work for you. I've used Otter AI, I think is the closest I'll get. But it takes time for me or my VA to go through and edit that. And, you know, like for any of those AI tools, like you'll have something to start with, but it's a ton of editing. It probably ends up being the same amount of time as somebody sitting there and manually transcribing it. But now, you know, the pay for transcribers online has, you know, it's not the best, especially like with all those different sites. I know transcribers that work on their own and work with their own clients, do cold outreach and stuff like that. And they seem to be a lot more successful with that versus the whole online gig option where you're doing it for a site or through a marketplace.
Yeah. And there's, you know, everybody and their brother has, you know, some online course that they're teaching.
Yeah.
Like there's one side of the spectrum that says it must be a scam. Why are they giving away their secrets? Why are they selling this stuff?
Yeah.
And then the other side is, you know, sure, I must invest in education. You almost like need somebody's permission before you're allowed to go do the thing. Like you can learn a lot for free. You know, I've invested in courses almost as an accelerator rather than a starter. Like how can I shortcut the learning curve? Mm-hmm. And it's kind of funny because I was, you know, I'm somewhat the same way, you know, where it's like, we don't bat an eye at like, oh, the university tuition is, you know, 25 grand or whatever it is. And by the way, you're, you know, ROI prospects or your job prospects may or may not be any better as a result of that. But $500 for an online course that teaches a specific skill or strategy, like, oh, I don't know. So there's a lot of truth in everything, but there's nuance to it. And so the longer you stick around, the longer you can study up and see what's going on, seeking third-party opinions that are hopefully not affiliated with that. Like that's the drawback to some of these programs, like, well, they've got a prolific affiliate program. Keep that in mind as you're reviewing the top 10 search results in Google. Like, wow, they all say positive things because they're getting paid to tell you positive things.
Yeah, right. A lot of things that will come up in Google, like the 10 best tools for whatever.
I mean, you can learn so much for free on YouTube, on podcasts. I remember talking to a guy who'd started a call center, like a remote answering service.
Yeah.
And he's like, I got so much free mentoring. My strategy was to, you know, the market leader is Ruby receptionist out of Portland. And so I would listen to every interview that the founder or CEO of Ruby gave. Mm-hmm. And she would, you know, give these metrics. Oh, you know, we try to have, you know, X amount of reps per customer. And, you know, this is how we think about hourly rates. And, you know, this is, you know, kind of the sweet spot. He's like, oh man, it's like getting the inside playbook. So you can learn a lot of that stuff for free.
Oh yeah, for sure. Like, well, podcasts are a great one to learn like while you're doing other stuff. I've learned a ton from podcasts just from like cleaning my house, you know, just listening to it, or like YouTube videos. I really like stuff in video format for my own learning, even though I hate creating video format for others just because I'm not the greatest on video. But yeah, like when you're thinking of side hustles, if you see something scammy, it's usually like it could be presented as being too good to be true. Somebody might be benefiting from it, you know. It might have worked for a subset of people because you're, you know, not everybody's the same.
Yeah. What we see in like the Side Hustle Nation Facebook group is, you know, and you start to spot it after a while. It's like kind of like the copy and paste. It's not even like the way a normal person would phrase this stuff. Like, mm-hmm. I make 2K weekly with automated trading. And like,
like what is automated trading? Yeah.
You know, delete, ban, you know, goodbye. Stuff
right.
Like that.
So yeah. Or if it's like, you know, for this fee of $5,000, I think of the Lula Rich documentary that was on mm-hmm. Amazon about LuLaRoe. And I had some friends that actually did LuLaRoe.
Yeah.
And LuLaRoe had a upfront kit cost of this kit that you buy, which is like all of these things that you buy upfront for your inventory. It was $5,000. And I know people that actually paid that and they never broke even.
Yeah, that stuff is, the appeal is, hey, it's a business in a box. You know, why start something from scratch? Why reinvent the wheel? We've got a proven system. It's why people buy McDonald's franchises. Look, you're buying the system.
Yeah.
But it can be challenging. And where the network marketing stuff becomes really challenging really fast is, I mean, most of the people who sign up for it, that business in a box appeals to them. But they're not marketers. And so once they tap out their existing network, it kind of dries up. And you're like, well, you got to keep expanding this thing if you want it to work. And that's why it doesn't for most people.
Yeah. Unless it's like something like the road, then just don't do it. Any of those things that where it is like this, like an MLM, you know, more like a pyramid scheme. I know some MLMs, people will say that they have worked great for them. I know some Sensi MLM folks that it has worked for them, but it's also one that, you know, all MLMs, the average is that people lose money with them. I mean, those are the ones that are more like pyramid scheming. Because yeah. I mean, if we think about multi-level marketing itself, it's a lot of things that other people don't really consider. Like something like affiliate marketing is, it's kind of a multi-level where like there's a product that you use, you then recommend that product to somebody else. If they make a purchase, you get a commission, and then the company itself makes most of the money. So it's like there's levels there, even though it's not the same as multi-level marketing where you're doing direct selling. And it's affiliate marketing is more of like a thing you would integrate into the foundation of your business. You wouldn't do it like alone as an income source because it's really hard to do unless you're doing it solely like something like on Amazon where you do have like that product that will show up on the products page based on the video that you created. Or if they want to do something like affiliate marketing through a social media page, which will take a lot of effort actually. So it gets a little complicated with that. I interviewed you a few years ago for an article on my blog I was writing about making money reading books, and you had recommended something that you've done, which was editing books. So how did you get started with that originally? And I guess what kind of editing was it specifically? I think it was an ebook.
Yeah, it was, you know, specifically aimed at nonfiction self-published authors. And it might have even said that in the description, like, hey, you know, if you're writing vampire romance, I'm not your guy. But, you know, in this specific, like if you're in the self-help, you know, nonfiction business genre, like, cool. I love reading that stuff. I'm happy to help you out. And it really came, you know, to take it one step broader is, you know, trying to find the intersection or, you know, the Venn diagram of what, you know, what you are maybe better than average at. Like, hey, I was an A student in English and actually learned a ton more about grammar rules, like while doing this side hustle. So I was like, oh, I'm better at it now than I was. What you kind of have some interest in, or what do you like? I like to read in my spare time. Anyways, like, okay, there's, you know, circle number two. And then number three is, you know, where do you have a little bit of a toehold? Maybe it's, you know, a colleague or a coworker or a friend or a neighbor, you know, how could you kind of just, you know, get your foot into the door into this market? And in my case, had written a couple, maybe two or three self-published books myself at that time. So it was somewhat a part of the self-publishing community and on a couple of different Facebook groups. And so, you know, try and find what that overlap might be in your case. I got some of my first customers from Fiverr. And so I created this gig. I was like, hey, I'll proofread and edit your nonfiction book. It's like $5 for every 500 words. And so it ended up being some, you know, most books are much longer than 500 words. So it ended up being some pretty sizable jobs. Probably most were 200 to 1,000 bucks, and got to read some interesting work from there. The worst ones were the ones that you could tell used speech to text. And so they were like dictating this as they were driving around in their car. And they're like, oh gosh, it's going to take forever. But I would, you know, fire up the treadmill desk at my old office and, you know, go to town on these books. And it was a pretty fun side gig for a little while.
That's cool. I know Facebook groups for me too, helped me get more freelance writing stuff in the beginning, because I was a part of a lot of blogging groups and I was blogging before I started freelance writing. I started freelance writing because I needed some practice with blogging and I wanted to learn more about how other blogs were run basically, and the things that they did. It's a great way, you know, freelance writers, it's a great way to kind of learn more about the online content creation industry. And I guess like as a whole, or like in a higher level, learning from other publications and their processes. And I think one of the groups was Binders Full of Writing Jobs, I think is one of the Facebook groups. And it's still up today and it still like has regular posts for open gigs, and it includes editing on there too, I think.
Yeah. And you'll see, and people just ask questions like, hey, I'm looking for an editor, or I'm looking for, you know, I'm actually looking for a like children's book illustrator. My total side note, like my then 4-year-old came up with this, you know, imaginary friend called Rita the Cheetah. And, you know, Rita the Cheetah is a vegetarian with a tiger mom, but he eats fish and glitter toast. It's like, because he's a pescatarian, or she's a pescatarian. And like, okay, so I write this story about Rita and I figure that's the hard part. And now I'm like, oh shoot, how am I going to get this thing illustrated? And so trying to mess around with AI and like, that's, I'm not getting anywhere. Trying to make the characters look consistent and stuff. So I've got some conversations started with different illustrators there. But again, you know, Facebook groups, author Facebook groups have been a resource to connect with those people. I was going to say the other thing on the book editing side, in my case, was developing a relationship kind of as a preferred vendor or a, you know, a trusted service provider for a course that taught self-publishing. And so this guy would bring aspiring authors in and teach kind of this, you know, step-by-step process of, you know, going from idea to published book. And, you know, one of the important steps is like, hey, you really ought to have a second set of eyes look at this. And, you know, that was one way to get business too, as kind of a preferred recommendation there. And same thing, like my wife and her partner do for photography. They're like, you know, they're on the preferred vendor list for this popular wedding venue in California. And so, like, you know, every season new brides are coming through. And so they get business that way.
That's cool. I love, like, when people talk about, like, so they've done something, like in your case, you've done self-publishing. So you knew, you kind of were already editing because you're editing your own stuff, right?
Yeah. Well, you can't edit your own stuff or you can't do it very well, but you're familiar with the process. You know what the funny thing is? Like, even after going through it so many times, you're so sick of looking at the words on these pages.
Yeah.
And then I would go, you know, because I had the podcast, I reasoned, like, if I'm going to do the audiobook, it probably ought to be me. Sometimes you're just reading sentences that you wrote, you know, 5, 6, 7 times trying to get this take. You're like, apparently that was just a crappy sentence because I cannot figure out the right intonation for that. And you still find typos going through and trying to do the audiobook version, you know, forcing yourself to read it out loud.
Yeah. Obviously you can edit your own stuff. I know that as a freelance writer, but I mean, I meant to say, like, in terms of your blog, you were probably editing a lot of stuff in the beginning, you know, writing in general, you're doing a lot of editing through your writing and then afterwards before you send it for, like, some final edits. So doing that so much with your own writing, it becomes like the second nature to edit. So of course you went towards, you know, doing some ebook editing on your own as a side hustle. And I'm sure it was a great experiment for your website as well.
That's right. If nothing else, get a story about it for the website.
Right. Just do it for the content if it doesn't work out.
It's all about that content.
Yeah. So freelance writing is a side hustle that I've had for, I guess, 6 years now. In the beginning, I didn't think it was something I would be doing that long. I was just like, also at the same time, I was like guest writing for other blogs, trying to increase, like, you know, external search engine optimization for my website. And then I had some inquiries about freelance writing for other people's websites. And then it was also nice that sometimes they would let me include maybe a link or two of my own stuff and still get paid for it. Or like my link would be in my bio on their website. So it also, at the same time, I was making more money with freelance writing and also got to increase the authority of my blog through it and the authority of, like, my names being on these websites, you know, those bylines.
Totally. Yeah. You wrote, you know, how we're selling guitars on eBay or something for side hustle for a while. That was on page one for, like, how to make money on eBay.
Yeah. So we resold guitars on eBay for a while. My wife was the one that started that one because she loves guitars. And then we moved from St. Louis to Washington State. And of course, with that, she sold like a bunch of them. And then we still had some. She's gotten a couple since we've been here, but we haven't been doing it at all that much like we used to be. And that's mostly just because, like, time. And then moving here, we have so much more stuff to do because Washington is amazing.
Especially this time of year.
Yeah. So I know, like, for those side hustles, for like freelance writing, editing, proofreading, people are starting to get more cautious and are like, well, should I even start this? Or like, how are you going to continue doing this with AI in the picture? And it's like, AI doesn't have our brains. It's only going to create content based on the content that's already out there. It won't create any new ideas.
Yeah.
Do you think there's still room for freelancers in that area?
I think so. You remember kind of the, you know, so-called content mill sites where you could get an article for, you know, as low as $5, you know, in that $5, $25, $50 range for an article. And, you know, at that price, it's just going to be regurgitated. It's probably not going to be the highest quality. So I think that stuff, that's going to have a hard time competing with AI. Because even why pay $50? Why pay, you know, somebody $5 when you could just have ChatGPT spit out something that might actually be better quality? But what you'll see is freelance writers start to use the AI tools as their, you know, research assistant, almost like as their, you know, intern assistant. Like, hey, help me research this. Help me brainstorm ideas. What did I miss here? That's kind of how I've been using it a little bit so far, rather than, you know, paste in the prompt and be like, oh, sweet, I got 2,000 words. Let's paste it on. Like, ooh, be really hesitant to do that. But I still think there's opportunity to use the tools and build a business on there, like, be able to work smarter, essentially.
Right. Never copy and paste anything directly from AI onto an article or anything that you're doing, because that's probably going to be plagiarism. A lot of the word combinations it takes is directly from other articles that it finds on the internet. It is a natural language processing program. So it's going to just create these strings of words based off of like what you input into it based off of the data that it already has, and it can't create new ideas. So you're going to end up unintentionally taking content from some other website or including content that isn't true, you know, not fact check.
Yeah, I got to fact check this. Maybe that's the biggest point of differentiation is going to be your personal expertise and opinion and insight. And it's, you know, to go back to your point, like, oh, I really, you know, I'm longing for a project where I don't have to show my face, my personality. The stuff that I've tried to do that was more anonymous never really took off. And this is just, you know, personal experience, but like the stuff that I was willing to sign my name to and kind of stick my neck out there and stick with it for a long time, those are the projects that saw the best traction.
Yeah. For any of the projects I've done anonymously, like the one that's done the best is freelance writing when it's ghostwriting. So right now I have a technical client where I only do technical writing for them. So like technical guides. And then another one where it's a CPA website. So it's a lot of tax content, which I actually like. I'm learning a ton about taxes. Both of those things don't have my name on them. And I really like them because it's like, they give such detailed briefs. It's like, okay, boom, boom, boom. I sail right through them. They never have, like, they'll maybe have like one thing of feedback. It's not really like anything where I don't have to do a ton of extra work. It's just like, here's your assignment. Here it is. There you go. And then they pay the invoice immediately. I'm like, thank you. This is a great process for me to have on the side of a business where I am, you know, my personal image is out there. But for semi-passive side hustle ideas or like online side hustles that can generate an income, you know, months and years afterwards, where you're not putting in a daily effort anymore, I have not been able to do any of those anonymously. I mean, I like to dabble, has my image on there on the first page. You don't see it much after that if you're on mobile.
Yeah.
But people know, you know, on social media.
Yeah. You know, people like to follow people, you know, they want to see who's behind it. They want to read that about page. They want to, you know that you've tried and tested the things that you're talking about versus just following, you know, some corporate entity. I don't know.
Right. Yeah. They like a little bit of a personal touch rather than corporate jargon, maybe being pushed back at them or just, you know, like a company where a lot of that stuff isn't, they don't have like the best interests of their customers or their audience versus like maybe a person that probably does, or at least tries to as much as possible.
Unless you get so big that it becomes like a sought after brand. Like, you know, I will Google like, you know, wire cutter best robo vacuum or something, you know, like, oh, because they built up that trust, or, you know, Nerd Wallet best credit cards or something. Like there's a, you know, there's a step to get to that level of name recognition where, you know, I don't care who's writing the article, but it's on Nerd Wallet, so I trust it.
Right. Same here. I love Nerd Wallet. That's such a good point. So I love chatting about like all of the fun things that side hustles have been able to teach us. But the things that I don't think people talk about enough to show that like all this effort put in does really pay off and it changes people's lives in amazing ways. So I also wanted to ask you, like, what are some of the amazing things that these side hustles and the businesses that you've built have allowed you to do and like allowed you and your family to probably do?
Yeah, it's just the stuff that you really take for granted, like not having to ask anyone else for permission for time off. Like that was huge for me. That was, I don't know, that really rubbed me the wrong way when I started my one and only corporate job. Like I'm not in control of my own calendar. It just felt, I don't know, felt childish in a way. Like, can I go to the bathroom? kind of weird, but no, super grateful, flexible schedule to be able to drop off and pick up the kids and to be with them if they're sick or, you know, spring breaks and stuff like that, to be able to take off and go skiing. Probably got in a couple dozen ski days this year. Just this week, you know, was hiking and golfing with my dad, who now, you know, now that we live close to family again, really cool to be able to do stuff with him and my brother, who's also close by. It's hard to imagine going back to, you know, punching the clock 9 to 5 for somebody else and not having that flexibility.
Yeah. I recently took a part-time job and it's only like it's like 4 to 5 hours a day. It is for technical writing, which is pretty cool because I have a degree in computer science. I've been an engineer and I quit my job last year to do this full time and to just, you know, explore other creative projects because it was something I wanted to eventually do, quit. And even though I wasn't at this place where it's like, oh, I could quit forever, probably. I was like, yeah. I want to quit at least for a time to explore these other things. Now that I've built up all these investments and these savings and we were in a good place to do that, now it's come to the time where it's like, I've gotten a little too stressed just about bringing in the certain amount of revenue so I can pay myself a certain amount and my contractors a certain amount. And just the way my brain is, I overstressed sometimes, like about a lot of that stuff. So I want to just take some of the pressure off of me as I continue to build these things. So
yeah,
it was so weird. It came to me out of the blue and I was like, well, this actually sounds pretty cool. It's, I get to be flexible with my time. I don't have to be available during a certain time unless, you know, there is something that's discussed that we have, because everybody works from different time zones. There's people in Texas, there's people in California, there's people in Michigan, and it's really cool. I do enjoy it so far, but it's like, I don't think I'll ever take another full-time job again. The part-time thing that's really flexible is great for me right now. And it also improves my writing outside of that job. But I don't think I'll ever take a full-time one again.
Isn't that great to have the flexibility to do it? You know, I've got these other skills and income streams that I built up. So I don't have to work full-time. I think that's really cool.
Yeah. And it's really cool that like now I was never really specifically a technical writer at my job. I always had to just document and create all of these articles based on the work that I was doing. So we didn't have like technical writers at most of my positions, but I had that skill baked in. I explored it more with freelance writing, with technical writing clients for like these small, just technical blogs, or they were software as a service website. And then I just, you know, build up my portfolio. And oddly enough, this opportunity came along and I was like, well, that's weird, because it's also like a financial website, but they also needed to document some of their API. So I was like, they're like, we've been looking for somebody that has both financial writing experience and the software engineering background. I'm like, well, that's weird. I actually do have that. And that's what I do right now. So
It's the perfect example of that sweet spot. Like, hey, that's how many people are you going to find in that circle? It's me.
Yeah, I know. You mentioned you only had one corporate job ever. What were you doing like then? I don't think I've ever known like what you did in your corporate life, your former life.
My former life. Gosh, I was a manufacturer's rep for Ford. And so it was coming in into this, you know, at the very bottom rung of this 100-year-old company. And it was on the service and parts side of the business. So Ford makes money selling cars and trucks. They make money selling parts for those trucks. And then they make money selling like extended warranty products and financing on those. So we got like the three main pillars of that business. So we were on the service and parts side. And you go out to these dealers and some of them have been in business for generations. Like they had their charter signed by Henry Ford. And that part was really cool. Like the car business was fascinating. That time in the auto industry, it was like the era of, you know, employee pricing for everybody, and like that weird, you know, mid-aughts timeframe. It was cool. Like no 2 days were the same, because it was always, you're always out on the road talking to different people, but at the same time had like no desire to climb the corporate ladder. You know, all roads lead back to Detroit. It was like, I don't know. I got to figure out how to do my own thing.
Yeah, I've never wanted to climb the corporate ladder just because I saw other people doing it and how it wasn't very fulfilling for them either. So I didn't want to fall into the trap of kind of going after something that I never really wanted in the first place. And that's different for other people. You know, if it's a job they really love, they really like going for that, you know, go for it. You know, if there's, if you want a more flexible life, if you don't want to really go for that, you know, try something else. That's why we're here.
It helped that they weren't paying a ton. So it was like easier to walk away from. You meet some people who are, you know, mid-career, six-figure salary, maybe multi-six-figure salary, like all of a sudden, and if, you know, and they've had the lifestyle inflation to that, it's like, then it becomes a lot harder to build a scrappy side hustle to get you to that, you know, $5,000 a month replacement level income.
Right. They're depending on that income they have now, or that increasing income, where it's like, being able to walk away is a little harder. Being able to pivot your working life is a little harder.
Yeah.
Which brings me to my last question. I love this question. It's my favorite question on all of my interviews. And, you know, since we're speaking of your past corporate experience, what is the absolute weirdest, you know, this can be good, weird, or bad, weird thing that's ever happened to you at work? I mean, your side hustles, your business.
One thing that comes to mind. So in this job for Ford, driving across the San Mateo Bridge in California with my boss, and I'd just gotten transferred there from Atlanta. And he says, hey, Nick, you know, the scouting report on you is that you'll never be an all-star.
What?
And I kind of look over and like, you know, I'm like, you know, 2 weeks into this job, I'm like, why is he telling me this? Like, is he trying to motivate me? Is he trying to, you know, see what my reaction is going to be? Is he trying to get me out the door? Like, hey, I only want all-stars on my team. You're not it. Like, why are you here? My gut reaction is like, well, that sucks. I want to be an all-star. Like, why play the game if you don't want to be good? And it took a while to realize that, like, you know what? He was right. I don't want to be an all-star. I don't want to be an all-star in your game. I want to play my own game. And it was, yeah, it was just a weird moment that turned out being kind of a correct observation. Like, yeah, this is not the game for me. Go find a different game that you can excel at.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. It kind of like helped you course correct in that moment. Like, wait, what do I want to be that? I don't think so though.
If that's the reputation that is somehow preceding me after just 2 years at this company. Like, I don't know. It was a weird moment, but you know, it helped confirm my desires to get out of there.
Right. Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for coming on to the podcast today, Nick. Tell the Bessies where to find you, where to work with you, all that good stuff.
Well, absolutely. Thanks so much for having me again. Always a good time to chat about this stuff. Would love to have you tune into the Side Hustle Show. It's, you know, we got 10 years worth of side hustle ideas to choose from in the archives over there. You can start with Daniela's episode. It's number 547. We're debunking a bunch of TikTok side hustles in that one. It's a lot of fun. You can then choose the ones that are most interesting to you. Another one that might be worth checking out on the topic of remote work is number 550. And this is with a guy named Ryan, who described a really unique way he was selling web design services on a, you know, monthly subscription basis. And at the time we recorded, had just hit $100,000 monthly recurring revenue for that business. So yeah, Side Hustle Show, episode 547 with Daniela, and 550 with Ryan. Definitely worth checking out. Other than that, if you prefer text, sidehustlenation.com/best. This is my updated list of, you know, our top picks for the best side hustles of the year.
All right. Thank you so much, Nick.
You bet.
Thank you for listening to Remote Work Bestie. If you enjoyed this episode, leave a review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. And if you want to tell me about the weirdest things that's ever happened to you at work, or have any questions you'd like me to answer on the podcast, email remoteworkbestie@gmail.com. See you next week.